got Danielle filling in for Vic this week, who's on vacation. Vic, though, using his vacation days improperly, texting in our group chat nonstop, taking shots at me, in fact. I didn't really appreciate that, Vic. I said it going into break. I don't know if you ever overlook stories in Toronto. I feel like we probably over-discussed a few, but we'll ask our next guest, Chris Versteeg, former NHL forward, two-time Stanley Cup champion and co-founder and CEO of the Clever app, K-L-E-V-R app, not the Kevlar app. What's up, buddy?
Wow, that was really nice. You did it right this time.
Yeah, I know. I'm getting better. I'm improving, you know. Let this be a case for our bosses who are constantly considering whether or not I should not be a part of this show is, hey, there are signs, right? You can use this as a sign of me trying to do better.
Well, the other day I looked at my kid's neck guard and it said Kevlar and I had instantly thought of you.
Yeah, that's good. Yeah, yeah. I hated I actually got kicked out of some hockey games as a kid, or not kicked out, but like removed because I hated wearing a neck guard. And I was
Sounds
a goalie.
Sounds like kicked out.
Yeah, I hated it. I hated neck guards. I thought they looked so uncool. I didn't like the way that they ever felt. I always felt trapped by them. And it was just tough. And I would end up having officials, where's your neck guard? I was like, oh, I tried to get away with it. One of the dumbest things I think I've ever done is try to play hockey my entire life without neck guard. Like, I really hated them.
You'd thrive in today's game, though. They're attached to the shirt now. They attach them right to the shirt.
Yeah.
Best part about playing NCAA hockey is that you don't have to wear one.
Mm-hmm. Well, I thought they did. CHL's mandated it, though, I believe.
And down in the States, we had to wear mouth guards instead of neck guards. I don't know if that's a win or a loss.
Yeah, you got to wear mouth guards everywhere. Yeah,
that was the trade-off. Choice.
Yeah. I still think that one of the first like cool moments you have as a kid is that first time you get your first mouth guard and you get to mold it and you get to make it, and just it feels like it's your own personal thing.
Put your number on it, logo of your team.
It was the best. Getting that first mouth guard was like a real thrilling experience. Like I wish I could replicate some of those things now. Okay, so Chris, I don't know really what to make of this West Coast trip with the Leafs. They've had some big stories, hey, the goaltending is really bad. Hey, Justin Hall is really bad. Marner's playing really good. I'm going to start with the positive one. Let's get out of the gates feeling positive here. Is anyone in the NHL right now playing better than Mitch Marner is?
Nah, he's incredible. It's just like, I think we've always talked about this each and every time about Mitch Marner. His skill level is some of the best in the world, right? You think of Patrick Kane, you think of Sidney Crosby and all these guys. And Mitch Marner, to me, is right up there with him. There was a play on the power play, I believe it was the other day. He kind of picked up the puck. He went like really close to the ice on the power play, close to the boards. He cut to the middle, gave it to Matthews. Matthews dropped it off. Like he literally creates something out of nothing every single time, and it's so fun to watch. I even kind of thought he was going to do that play where he set up camp there for that open net, because that's just the creative play that he would want to do. He'd want to drag the goalie with him, drag the defender, and then leave the puck there. It was such a brilliant play. But when you're feeling it like that, and he's got, you know, he has his edge work, he has his skills, and everything's ticking at the same time, it's unstoppable. That's something, again, we talk about at the end, his skill's not going to get better. For me, it's in tight games. It's how do you get to the net? How do you compete in hard areas? And that's what he should start prepping for right now, because the playoffs, it's not going to be like last night, right? You're going to have to start prepping for that. But again, get back to positive with Mitch. I don't want to get back to the negative. He is incredible. It is so much fun to watch, especially in open ice.
Do you think there's a more polarizing player right now in the NHL in terms of their fan base? So we have people that text in sometimes saying, get rid of him, too overpaid, done with Marner. And then you have the other side of the fan base that's like, you know what, he is the best player in hockey. He's so incredible. Just give him his love and his flowers. I don't know if there is anyone else that's that polarized. I don't know if you could think of anyone, but I really couldn't.
Not on this team, but for me, like at the end of the year, we were all talking last year, do you get rid of Marner? I was like, no, you don't get rid of Marner. What Marner needs to do is sit down with someone else besides the people he's been with currently, and teach him where to go on the ice, how to compete in certain areas, how to engage in the game. And also that kind of comes back to the coaching staff as well. If Marner's not going early on in a playoff series, put him on the third line, let him work his way back up the lineup, let him get fired up, you know? So for me, it's more about that mental state in big games. in closer, tight-checking games, if he's going to make the right play every time. You can go back to that Montreal series. I remember in the, I think it was game six or game seven, right at the start, he was trying to stick handle from his own end all the way down. He got pickpocketed, and it was in the back of the net. Just things like that, right? How to make the right play at every time. If everyone wants to compare him to Patrick Kane, you never see Patrick Kane make those plays, right? He's consistent at making the right play at the right time, especially in the biggest moments. And that, for me, as you look back to Mitch Marner, who can he sit down with as a third party, someone he's never talked to before, that's going to help him get better in those moments or help him find space in tighter games or just get more engaged in the game? So if you're talking about regular season, everything, he is one of the best, right? If you're looking back to playoffs, yeah, there is an issue there. But at the same time, you need to get to the playoffs, and he's a guy that gets you there every time. So, I mean, you look at the cap hit, you look at everything else you can get with it, but you don't see a guy that can create something out of nothing like that each and every time that can drag you through 82 games and at least get you to that fight. And he's just that guy.
Yeah, it's going to be impossible to discuss him if they choke again in the playoffs, and he's the responsible reason for that, because that would be four postseasons in a row where he's been incredibly underwhelming. And I don't know how many times you go back to the well on something like that and say, oh, this is something that doesn't need a change of scenery, or this is something that you just keep running back and you keep saying, like, bringing up his age and the fact that he's got time to go on the contract and blah 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 blah. But yeah, he does get you there. He does get you there. And it's so tough talking about a guy's mental state, right? Because it's the one thing that, like, none of us can quantify, and you got to actually be around it. But it's clearly a big component of what was going to be his season. He was seemingly a bit lost during the offseason. One of the focuses that was widely reported on was, this dude needs to stay off social media. This guy needs to start to block out the noise. And one thing I've liked about Mitch's game recently is it does look like he's having fun. Last night he has an assist that looks like a junior hockey play, right? That's something where he probably hasn't done that since he was with the London Knights, where they're just absolutely body bagging teams 8-2 every night. And Mitch goes, yeah, I got room to make this play. That's fine. I'll try this out. I'll make that drop pass. He just looks like he's playing free and easy. I just wonder if he's going to be able to carry that into the playoffs, or as we get closer and closer to this thing, whether that tightens up.
Well, another player that you could kind of compare to the same situation who has had underwhelming playoffs is actually a good friend of mine. It's Johnny Gaudreau, right? It's like these players do so much during the season, and then they get to the playoffs, and how do they get to that next level? You don't know. Yeah. You're talking about, like, social media. This is something I had, like, Jonathan Huberdeau lived with me when he was a rookie, and every day after he would come home and he would look at the stats, right? He would see, like, oh, where am I in comparison to the other rookie, whatever. So I would talk to Jonathan. I'd be like, man, try not to look at the stats for like 2 weeks. You know what I mean? Because each and every game you're going into, if you don't get a point, you're worried about this. If you do get a point, then you feel good. And it allows you to ride that wave and that roller coaster. Now, some of the top guys, they can mentally handle that. I couldn't, you know what I mean? So I was trying to give Jonathan a little bit of piece of information there. And the rest of the season, he went on, he didn't look at the stats, and he just played his game, and he ended up winning the Calder. But that's just something, you go back to Mitch Marner. If you're going to go on Twitter, or if you're going to go and look at all the bad things said about you, even though there's a million good things, those things start to add up, and it'll start to affect your game, because you're more worried about what the fans think than what you're actually doing for your team. And you go back, you look at him last night, he's having tons of fun. You can tell when the top players are having fun, because it looks like a joke after they score. Like, it looks like he's not even celebrating. He's just like, this is just, you know, this is a great time. I remember when I go score a nice goal in like a penalty shootout, I was like, the game's a joke right now, you know? And then if you haven't scored for 15 games, you get one, it looks like you're going to jump out of the building. So, like, when the top players, I was never close to these guys, but you can tell when they're feeling it, because it's all over their body language. It's the swagger they're walking around with after goals, everything, and it's incredible. So, yeah, I hope he is staying off that. I hope he's not paying attention, and he keeps his head down, and he keeps doing what he's doing, and he carries it into the playoffs. Because, yeah, if he was 5% better, 5% last playoffs, the Leafs could have been in the finals, if you think about it, right?
Yes.
Like, They were so close to ending it. And then this is kind of what is a little bit of an issue with the Leafs. They make stupid plays at stupid times. Like, if Galchenyuk throws a no-looker game 5 OT, you know, and then game, you know, the other night against Vancouver, John Tavares, a minute left in the second period, he throws a bat, you know, just like stupid plays at stupid times. But if Marner could have been 5% better last playoffs, those plays probably wouldn't even have had to happen, because they would have been done in 4, right?
Yeah. I think they would have won last year if he is a little bit better last season. But if they're going to win a Stanley Cup, it sure seems like he's going to have to be this guy throughout the postseason. That the entire winning formula is that he, Matthews, and Bunting absolutely continue to dominate the way that those three guys are. Because, yeah, when you're talking about players who are playing with swagger and confidence, those are the guys. Where it's just every single night right now, especially when they get to the power play, where, yeah, Ailish mentioned it earlier in the show, they're number two now all time. A year after where they had no confidence, where you knew it. Like, there'd be one zone exit. They'd clear it one time, the opposition, and you knew the Leafs were done. You knew that it was just they're not going to be able to either. They're not going to gain the zone the same way. They're not going to set up the same way. Everybody's hesitant. Everybody's choking. Marner had no goals for like 100 power plays, which is insane because right now he's got 11 goals in his last 11 games. Yeah, so much of this is a feel thing. And I would say, hey, listen, for those of you that don't like social media or who are not good with social media and dealing with criticisms on it, stay off it more. Stop going on it more. Stop doing that. That's the easiest thing for Mitch Marner to do is like, I've done it the same way. I've done it the exact same way. Hey, mute the replies. Mute the replies on your tweet. Get off of it a little bit more. Don't be as terminally online. It will help you a lot. I think it's helping Mitch Marner. I really do. I really think that this is a part of it. So, speaking of the swagger, though, it doesn't feel like it's been the same way with the second line, and it's something that we can't decide whether or not this is a Toronto thing or whether or not this is a team structure thing, whether this is too big of a deal or too little of a deal, but their numbers are good. On the season, you look at those two guys specifically, Tavares and Nylander, and you say, oh, these stats are solid. Their advanced numbers are not as dominant as you'd like them to be. They're not night in, night out as dominant as you'd like them to be. What do you see with that group? What do you see with that line right now? Is this something where you just need to bring someone in from the outside? Is this just a shuffle? Is this just us over-discussing guys that are just fine? Is it comparing it to that other top line? What is it to you?
Well, you're comparing it to the top line, but what worries me about that second line, they see this top line playing free. They take a lot of risk, but they execute most of the time. Now, the second line, Tavares doesn't have Matthews' ability, and Nylander doesn't have Marner's, but they're still trying to take the same amount of risk to create the same amount of offense. And so when I watch that game against Vancouver, like, your captain's trying to throw a backhand pass through two guys to create offense with a minute and a half left in a period. You know, yesterday, Nylander, this is a play where at the end of a long shift, he toe-drags the guy, which is an amazing play, and then he goes back in his zone. I know it hits the ref, but these are plays where you got to keep moving the puck up the ice. These are plays that in the playoffs, they're going to kill your team night in and night out. And for me, it's the second line is trying to play with the same risk as the first line, and they just don't have the same ability as the first line. They need to keep it simpler. I do think they could move Kerfoot off that line or Nylander down to create a little more offense throughout the lineup. I just worry about the heaviness of that line come playoff time. I think they're fine right now. They can go out and they can throw sauce and they can take risks. But when it comes down to playing heavy, I worry about it. The thing which I liked about Nylander was how he forechecked on that first goal. He was in on it hard. I didn't like his stick placement. It was up above his head. He needs to have stick on puck. I think that's another issue with their line, is how they forecheck with their sticks is a bit of an issue. It's kind of like they put their sticks up and they're hoping for plays. But for me, Kyle Clifford, this sounds crazy. It sounds crazy, but I see Kyle Clifford sitting there. Why couldn't you just interject him in there? You know, move Kerfoot down, you move Nylander down, and you just give a little bit of different element to see if that would be something that could work even for a period in the playoffs, right? Or you could move Mikhaev up, or you could move Engvall up. You could just start to tinker with that to look at the type of physicalness that you're going to have to play and grind it out in a playoff series. So for me, it always comes back to there. You're trying to give everyone, especially your top players, the same amount of, coins in the bank, right? You can turn it over as many times, but that second line shouldn't have as many coins in the bank as that first line. They should play a little bit more aware of their game, a little bit more north-south, while still creating offense, and I think they'll be a little bit more successful. But come playoff time, if they're going to play this way, do stupid plays at stupid times, you're never going to win the Stanley Cup.
So you talk about shuffling things up and giving opportunities. I wonder your take on what to make of the goaltending situation in that sense, with Jack Campbell having a little bit of an up and down a couple months and having Peter Mrazek be pretty steady.
Down month.
Okay, yeah, down. A down month. But, there's been some highs in there as well. He has the game last night. He gets to win. You know, it wasn't too much of a pressure game for him. What do you do down the stretch here? Do you try to manage Jack's confidence levels by giving him more starts than he has been? Or do you try to get Peter Mrazek, who at least have a big contract, a big buy-in, to see what he might be able to provide the team if Jack doesn't get back up to the levels he started the season with?
Well, I feel bad for anyone who goes through a slump in February, because I still hadn't figured out how to play hockey in February. It's usually that month where if you're on a good team, you kind of go to sleep and you got to pick it back up going into March. So I think right now it's a little bit of a lull. Jack's played extremely well to this point, a month ago, and now he's in a bit of a lull. This should be a time where Mrazek starts to pick it up, but I think you do got to split it 50-50. You got to go back and forth, let them each find their game. Don't let Campbell run into the ground. He hasn't played this much hockey ever. He's had injury issues, so has Peter Mrazek. So I think the biggest thing looking at, especially the Eastern Conference, like, how many years has the Eastern Conference standings been set mid-season? You know what I mean? Like, you already know what eight teams are making the playoffs. So it's like, how much desperation are you going to get from teams night in and night out? I don't know on the way in. It'll be interesting. But for Jack Campbell, it's about managing his health. And he's the biggest piece to this team right now. Mrazek's a player that has played good in the playoffs, so I'd be interested to see how he could turn it up with the last 10 games in the season going in the playoffs if Jack is still faltering. But for me, it's just about priming Jack Campbell, getting him ready, getting him feel good. If he has a bad night, do not go back to him the next night. And it is going to be a storyline. It's going to be interesting to see what they can do, especially when the pressure mounts coming into playoff time.
After the deadline, it's going to be so thin on things to talk about, because there's going to be no urgency. There's going to be no playoff chase. There's going to be nothing. So, you know, every once in a while, we like to send you, hey, Chris, we'd like to talk about this with you. You better be doing it the other way around for the show after the deadline. Like, I want you to be texting us like, hey, guys, this is what you should be talking about. Like, thank you, Chris, because I don't know what the hell we're going to do. It's terrifying. It's daunting to think about Leaf storylines after the deadline. Like, okay, Justin Hall still stinks. He still stinks. He's going to be a problem. Great. I'll bring it up a million times. I'm going there now, though. What do you do with the guy? Because the nerd stats tell you he's good, and that's just, I don't know how. This is like 101 of why I just can't get behind these as the only way to evaluate a player, because just night in, night out, there's something. And if we're going to talk about confidence, this guy looks completely lost. Like, there are just simple plays in his own zone night in, night out that you see him just bobbling, missing, and just routinely free looks at these goaltenders. Like, I keep wondering too, when we're saying, hey, both these goalies, are we getting enough out of both of them? Or how much of it is just like directly tied right now to Justin Hall's play? I don't know. How have you evaluated it? What do you do with him? Because it's not like they have a lot of luxury at the position where they can just sit him for a night. But man, I haven't seen a guy on this team that looks like he needs a night off more than him.
Yeah, we could complain about the forwards all we want. They are not the issue. Like, not even close. To me, it's the defense, right? And it's Justin Hall and it's Timothy Liljegren. I worry about both of them. Every time I look up, especially Liljegren, there's a chance going at the net. There's unmarked coverage. There's just no... I mean, the compete in the D zone with Liljegren worries me a lot more than even Justin Hall. But Justin Hall is more of a third-line D-pairing guy, right? He sets with Muzzin. Muzzin makes his defense partners a lot better. And if you're confident and you're Justin Hall, it's great. But when you're not confident, he definitely slots into that third line. So I'm looking at this Leafs team. We've said it, I think, when we talked about a month ago. Who are you going to bring in that can kind of help solidify the defense? You know, I look out and I look at a guy like Nick Leddy. He's a better Rasmus Sandin to me. He shoots harder. He's a little bigger. He's better. He can slot in. He can play his offside, much like TJ Brody. And he's a guy that could slot Justin Hall properly, I believe, on the third D pairing. If anything happens, you know, if Muzzin or someone gets hurt again, he can slot back up. But I think he comfortably slots in on that third D pairing between 16 and 18 minutes a night max. So I don't know. That's the biggest position to me. They need to find a defenseman who can come in, play top four, slot Hall correctly, get Liljegren out of the lineup, and then allow them to also, you know, create a little bit more from that second D pairing off the rush. Anyone who can hop into play. I know Hall can, but to me, it's not slick enough. You know, like TJ can hop up, Morgan can hop up. Muzz isn't really a guy who's going to consistently do it. Hall can try, but he just doesn't have the ability to, you know, create all the time. So I look at guys like Letty, who is this, like, I don't know how much he would cost at the deadline, right? There's other guys that you could kind of keep going down the list on the trade bait. But the defense for me and shoring that up, especially in that second D pairing, is crucial if they're going to win a Stanley Cup.
Yeah. I've been doing this thing of, hey, the Leafs just need to go out and get the best player available. And if that ends up being a forward, you got to go get the forward. And a little bit like the Foligno thing last year. I just feel less and less like that every single game. Like every single game, I'm like, no, you have to add to the blue line. Like you cannot go into the postseason with this group. You just can't do it.
I look at the forwards and I start to go down the forward list as well. I look at a guy even like Chris Tierney. You know, he's a guy that can play center. He can play the wing. He's had good playoffs. He's stable. I don't see you really needing to go out and blow the doors off the market at the forward group. I just see, like you watched last night at times, you're playing an okay Seattle Kraken team, and you watch some of the errors and the mistakes that those two players are making. That, to me, was more glaring and evident than anything. And that's the position, you know. Who's that guy who could play? You know, Ben Chiarot, I think, will garner too much. He'd be a great pickup, I think, for Toronto, but do you want to pay that much to get him? Who's that next guy after that would maybe cost a second rounder or a third rounder or like a, you know, a mid high prospect? Is that a guy like Nick Leddy? I don't know, but those are the players I'd start to look at to shore up that blue line.
It would just feel so weird to have Chiarot in the Leafs uniform after last year. Like, God. And Montreal, you know, there's a league price, and then there'd be a Toronto price, and you got to figure that the Toronto price would be through the roof. If they don't end up getting that one done. Christopher Stieg, again, Clever app. K-L-E-V-R. quickly, explain the Clever app before you go, too.
Yeah, it's a youth sport app. We basically streamline the ability for a parent or a coach to take a clip, edit, and share. So it's just about an easier way to film your young athletes and your youth athletes, and it's a free app. So it's exciting, and we've got a lot of people using it now, and always reach out to us on Instagram or wherever if you want to give us feedback.
It's a great thing. And I will say, you got to always remind me to make sure that I get you to explain it, because I feel like when you see people's eyes, it's like, oh, this person has an app now. It's just, you know, it is what it just sounds very basic. You know, you're very 2022 with you just having an app. You know, it's very cool, very chic. Christopher Stieg, thanks for doing this, man. We'll talk to you soon.
Take care.
See you, buddy. Two-time Stanley Cup champion. And again, if you are a parent, check it out. The Clever app, K-L-E-V-R. I liked
his mention of Chris Tierney, my old teammate, a Keswick kid.
Yeah.
He'd be a good fit.
Shoot him a text later today? Like, hey, how would you feel?
Hey, you should come to the Maple Leafs. I think you would love it. You know that team you probably grew up loving? Yeah. You could be like Michael Bunting.
Yeah. Yeah. You could be.
And Aaron Ambrose were my teammates. Imagine that. We got one Olympian and we got one guy in the Leafs, and then there's me.
The person who dangled Connor McDavid.
Don't ever forget it.
Yes, no one ever will. We're going to take a break. Blake, before we take the break, though, you have news.
I do?
Oh, Ailish put it in there, but I thought that was you.
I put a tweet in the chat.
Dragic got bought out. I thought that was you. Sorry, sometimes I've done this twice now today where I've read our chat off to the side and I don't see who wrote it. I'm just assuming based on the things that you guys do. No, I'm focused. I'm locked in on the show. But yeah, Goran Dragic, what we all expected. He's agreed to a buyout according to The Athletic and Stadium. So I'm assuming that's a Shams report. A bunch of teams are going to pursue him. I'm guessing that he just heads back to Miami, though, right? Like, a bunch of teams pursuing Dragic. Where is he going to go? Miami. That seems like the obvious spot.
I mean, it would. And obviously, that's where his home base is, and he has a relationship with that franchise. But they're going to be suitors here. Milwaukee's after him hard. The Lakers would really like him. There are a few other... Yeah, the Mavs with the Luka connection. There are a few spots for him. You know, I'd be... The thing about this I'm most curious about is not his landing spot. Like, him getting traded to a non-Raptors, non-Heat team is what allows for the possibility of him to sign with the Heat. He couldn't have if the Raptors just bought him out. I am curious to hear the figures eventually on the buyout, and see if the Spurs saved more money on the buyout than the Raptors saved on the trade. Because for those who think that the trade was at least in part financially motivated, if those numbers come out even, then, you know, maybe that's less of a data point. But not too worried about where he lands. He'll be a capable backup point guard for some playoff team.
Yeah, I got to think that the Dallas one, there's a little less possibility he goes there now, given that they traded for Spencer Dinwiddie.
Yeah.
It would be a little odd to now say, hey, come here. Imagine trading away Kristaps and then playing Goran Dragic in a clutch moment over Spencer Dinwiddie. That would be a bit of an oddity. I don't think that you're doing that. My guess is that he just goes back to the Heat, and we see Lowry and Dragic together. That'll be fun for Raptors fans. Great times ahead for you. Let's take a break.
Two Raptors legends, yeah.
Yes, both one and the same. More techs on the other side. Again, to reset a couple of the things, how do you get the person everybody hates off the beer league team?
You got a couple
especially
of those
when they have
line.
All their octopi tentacles and all the things that the team does. Do you have an awkward Valentine's Day story to share? I would like those as well. Follow on Instagram at JD Bunkus, at Ailish Forfar, and Blake Murphy. Twitter too. Hit us up in the DMs if you got something, or just text 590-590. You, the producers. Next, it's the Fan Morning Show. JD, Ailish, Blake.
Breaking down the top stories in the NHL every day. The Jeff Merrick Show. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Fan Morning Show, Sportsnet 590, The Fan. If you're listening right now live, Canada in a nail biter in men's curling, 4-4 against ROC in the ninth end. Put it on because JD has a bet and he's sweating it out over there. Sweating it out. Also, a special happy birthday to somebody that turned 50 today. Yager. 50th birthday, everyone. Yay!
Is poor Yager still playing hockey for that team that'll have to fold?
Doesn't remember he own the team and also play for the team?
Yeah, that was it. But I remember reading that he has to play for them. Otherwise, all the players will lose their jobs, or like the league will go under. And this dude is just hurt. Because remember, for a long time, Yager was basically the Tom Brady. Yager underrated in terms of the Tom Brady playing until a late age.
He's played 35 games for the Kladno Knights today in the Czech League.
Yeah.
Today.
Yeah.
And 19 games for the Kladno Knights in the Czech second division this year.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh no, sorry. Those are two different years. I'm messing it up. Anyway, so 35 games this year, and in 35 games,
what?
In 35 games, guess how many points he has? Just guess. 35 games, how many points?
Two.
Blake?
20.
19. Woo!
I was thinking more. This is a ceremonial thing at this point where he's going over. So if he's still playing, then I think that he's doing it reluctantly. Like he doesn't really want to be doing this. But yeah, Yager. I'll always think of him as the number one. What would the discussion around him be like had he played his entire career in the NHL? And what happens if no lockout? Just where he stands all time points, where he stands as an all time player. I feel like. Remember how I brought up the Odell Beckham Jr. thing yesterday of he was the biggest loser from the Super Bowl in terms of what could have been narrative-wise? That obviously the injury is very clear. He tears his ACL. He's going to miss at least the vast majority of next season. It's going to impact what he gets contractually. But I really thought at the beginning of that game that it was going to be the Odell Beckham Jr. game. And yes, we all recognize that Yager is an all-time legend. But you stack all those games that he didn't play in the NHL and or those games that he could have played in the NHL, and a lot of them during prime seasons, and it's hard not to at least wonder if he is the quote-unquote biggest loser of that era when it comes to stats they missed in this league and narrative that could have been attached to legacy.
There was actually some people wondering why he wasn't on the Czech Olympic team this year.
Because he's tired, everybody.
Old.
Stop making him do everything. Yeah. Yeah,
stop.
Why he's not? He's in what? Second league? Third league? Czech league? I think that
you ever read the Giving Tree when you were a kid?
Canada.
You ever read the Giving Tree when you were a kid? He's just a stump at this point.
No, poor guy.
Yogs. Okay,
anyway,
so what do we got?
Happy birthday. Hope you're celebrating hard today. Yes, we have lots line. In the text line. Let's go to, do you want Valentine's or do you want Men's Beer League or whatever?
Both. Whatever's best. Okay. You start it off. Just be the, you're the decider.
Thanks so much. All right. So, all right. When I played slow pitch in university, my team of early 20s guys played the championship against the late 50s profs. About halfway through the game, a guy on my team beat out a grounder to short and yelled, "Boom shakalaka!" Pretty easy to not invite him back after that. Another year, we had a guy strike out looking down one run to end the game with bases loaded. There's always one guy in every team that didn't make it back.
Whoa. Yeah. This was
That's
slow
harsh,
pitch,
though. The
and a
second
guy
one is
out
harsh.
Looking?
Yeah.
Yeah. Sounds
yeah.
Like it.
It's not great. It's not great. That's not great. But I got to imagine that league was terrible. Like,
can't hit the ball with
yeah, slow
like
pitch
a
strike
meat.
Out looking. Yeah. That's tough. Still, I'm a little more sensitive to that you cut somebody for the strikeout, that you guys went in and were actually just crestfallen that they did it. It's one of those things where, yes, it's bad, but you do also need the reality check moment of what you're all doing there, right? And the purpose of why you're gathered.
Okay, here's a pretty gutless one. This one I really like. I respect it. In baseball rec league, the coach used to carpool the worst player to every game. For the finals, he didn't tell him there was a game, and we left the championship trophy on his doorstep. Never saw the guy again. Ross from Whitby. It's an elite.
That just doesn't make sense. So this guy played all season, played in the semifinals ostensibly, and then just didn't know there was a championship game?
No, the guy... Well, like, I guess no. He just didn't tell him when it was, and he didn't pick him up for it, and then it happened, and they didn't tell him.
What kind of a...
Well...
Who doesn't ask? Yeah. Hey,
we... Well, maybe they thought... What if they said, okay, there's a two-week period before the next game. It was actually next week, you know? Just, like, lied to the guy, you know?
All right.
No? All right. JD, you all right over there?
Yeah, I just had to reconnect. I think I had a little bit of a delay,
yeah,
so I wanted
delay,
to just kind of get
sure.
back on here. So I reconnected. I think that story of leaving the guy at home, there's something being left out of it. There's just no way that the person accepted that they weren't texting you guys, that he wasn't calling you guys. Like, these things are usually set the next week, the same day, same time. Okay, so you didn't get a ride? You take the bus, you get a cab, you get an Uber. Like, there's a way around this where if all of a sudden the purse isn't picking up, you're telling me the entire team iced him out and then you left the trophy? Also, leaving the trophy on his step is almost an assault. It's pretty epic if you guys actually pulled it off, if this is a true story. But I will say there's a lot of shifting missing pieces to this tale that make me feel as though it's a bit of an exaggeration or somewhat of a lie, or something else is at play here that you're leaving out for the story, which is fine because I love a good story and I think that everyone should exaggerate their stories, by the way. If you're not exaggerating your stories, you don't know how to tell a story. You're boring. Sorry, you're boring.
Okay, Ross from Whitby, text back if you're listening with some more clarification because we're not buying it. Here's Brendan from Guelph. Sometimes you need Brendan. A guy on the team who could be cut for everyone else to trash talk. Builds a stronger bond between the rest of the team. Justin Hall, for example.
Yeah. Yeah. Hey, this is true. This is a good case, Blake.
Really, yeah, this is a common management technique of you need to have the common enemy, right? No, uh-huh. Nothing binds people together quite like dislike for someone else. This is management 101. It's a good point.
Yeah, so
that person,
you know what?
Though, that person could be a bad person that people don't enjoy being around, though, but they can't be a bad player as well. They could be one or the other.
Yeah, but here's the thing, though, is a lot of times they're both. And this is what I'm saying. A lot of times they are both, and a lot of times this is what we're trying to do today, is how do you exercise that person? That is an interesting thing, though. That is an interesting point, is could your team actually end up actually being better because
you
guys all hate
it.
This person? Yeah, you rally around it. You're firing messages in the group chat.
The
you're
dead
staying
coach
more
bounce.
Connected. Yeah, well, kind of. But yeah, it's just the hate bounce. It would be amazing to win a rec league tournament and call that person out and say, "Chris, we're all standing here today because we bonded over our mutual hatred for you, and we realized
Thank
that
you.
We all needed to buy in for one another. And Chris, we hate your guts. They do like the player haters ball, Chappelle, where it's just I hate you. I don't even know you, and I hate your guts. I love it. I actually love this theory. I'm kind of buying into that theory. I like the theory. All right, let's keep it rolling.
Okay, Mitch from Thornhill. Not only did our team cut a guy once, but we are so short players we had to ask him back, and then he came. The following season, we cut him again.
Yeah. Yeah, I like that. I like that. Oh, by the way, that's an all-time tough one, is cutting someone prematurely, thinking that they're out, but then all of a sudden other members of your team start to drop off and you need bodies, and you having to limp back to this person in order to fill out a roster. That's a tough look. That's a really tough look. By the way, I just want to say from my Instagram DMs to Curtis, that's a really good story that you sent, but I can't read it on the air, unfortunately. And I don't know how to spice it up in a way that doesn't seem inappropriate for those that are driving with children in the car or whatever. So, yeah, I'm going to have to shelve it, but it is good. I do respect it, Kurt. I do respect it. And I think you're kind of a chicken for not just following through. what's
we'll
next?
Have to get that story after the after the show, because I'm curious. Yeah.
Kurt,
okay.
The chicken.
So here's one about Valentine's Day. Probably my first real Valentine's Day, grade 8. I bought her the very cool Green Day Dookie album and some necklace.
Yes.
She bought me $1.99 box of chocolates. You know the kind. Yeah. They normally have 4 brutal chocolates. I was crushed. We broke up soon after. LOL. Dave from Barry.
You're a loser. You're a loser, Dave. Oh. Who cares? Who cares? The fact she bought you anything at all, Dave, is an upset of the century. You bought her a great gift. Way to go. Here's the thing. You're a guy. She's a girl. You're in grade 8. You're going through puberty. And you had the gall to... What is Blake? Remember, what is the one where he thought gift horse? Oh, yeah. He's like, look a gift horse in the mouth. Blake gave us the explanation of something that wasn't true. You
look a dead horse in the teeth Blake? Or something. Yeah.
Came 2,700 years before the actual one. So.
Sure.
Yeah. Jesus. So anyway, how dare you, Dave? How dare you feel as though that the transaction here was you were going to get equal gifts? She gave you To have a girlfriend in grade 8 when we're all covered in acne, and what's your worst look, right? What's your worst look of, hey, photos I don't want of me resurfacing
God.
On the
yes.
internet? Grade 8 is right in the pocket of it. Mm-hmm. Right in the pocket. And old Dave looked at this girl who acknowledged him and was willing to listen to the Dookie CD with him. And he said, you bought me cheap chocolates and walked away? Dave. You're trash. That is a trash move. I hope you grew out of that, Dave.
If you're in grade 8, the price of admission for...
Oh, my God.
...is an album. Also, like, you probably bought that with a $20 HMV gift certificate you got for your...
Your parents paid for it. Your parents paid for it. You didn't pay for that. Who cares? She bought you chocolates. Dave, oof. That's the most cringeworthy text I've ever received on the show.
It's Valentine's Day. Make a mixtape.
Yeah.
Come on.
Yeah, back in grade 8, like, that was so much fun. You get the little CD, you stick it in there, you make your little playlist, and it buffers, and you can hear your computer.
Well,
like,
okay, yeah, not when this guy was in grade 8, because if he was in grade 8 when Dookie came out, that means he's a little too old for burnt CDs in grade 8, I think.
Yeah,
he would have been still doing the cassette thing.
Because that was a CD of kids older than me.
That came out in 94, so he would be in 81 probably.
Oh, wow, Blake, the analytics are breaking
deduction.
This guy down. That guy feels very seen right now.
Mixtape analytics. Mixtape analytics.
All right, what's next? It's going to be hard to top that trash.
Oh, no. Okay, so this was about my bad evil Ailish, right? So we were talking about trying to find a name for Ailish, because we have Blake the Snake, and then JD is just JD.
So just naturally bad. It's just more shocking when the roles change, yeah.
So one of the main bad guys in Game of Thrones was named Lord Baelish. Got to be something there for evil Ailish. You know Lord Baelish?
Yes, I definitely do. I watched.
Yeah, it was Tommy Carcetti.
Yeah,
Littlefinger.
Sure. I was
going to
say
Lord Baelish,
almost like Lord of the Rings, but no, I got it confused. But no, I watched. Well, I've seen both of them, but I definitely watched Game of Thrones. God, it took me a second to get there. I actually loved Game of Thrones until the final couple seasons. It really stabbed me in the back. I was all in on it. And I was the person that was in my group of friends that was really the only one watching it and kept doing the defense of it where they would make fun of me and I would say, no, it's really good. You guys just were... Not. And then it sucked and I wasted my time. And so there's an extra bitterness I feel towards it that there wasn't even the payoff for all the defending of Game of Thrones that I did. But... there is something to that, because Baelish was the worst of the bad guys on Game of Thrones, I think. Joffrey and Baelish, those were the two that were the ones that you could not wait to see die. Like, what was the main
guy's name?
No, the guy who was the Lannister, the main Lannister, the dad Lannister.
Oh, Tywin?
Tywin. See, I liked him. I thought he wasn't so bad. He had redeemable qualities.
Well, he was at least like a good general. He was like,
exactly.
Strategy was good. You can dislike him, but you got to respect the hustle a little bit.
Exactly.
But yeah, Baelish was like selling Sansa into
Oh, wait. I just confused.
Like
I confused Baelish with the guy.
Baelish
with the
is
dogs.
A guy that looks like kind of like a creep. Like he looks like
Baelish was Littlefinger, Tommy Carcetti.
Yeah. No, I screwed it up. Yeah. I thought Baelish was the guy who feeds everybody to the dogs. What was that guy's name?
Oh, I don't
dog
remember
feeder.
That one. It's been a while.
Yeah,
since
but
I
he was bad too. I hated that guy. He was really.
Oh, the
mean.
Guy
he
who
was
fed
mean...
people to dogs.
Yeah, he was mean. He was a big old mean guy, but he did have some funny sausage lines.
That's the guy who flayed Theon, right?
Yes. Okay. I can't remember his name.
I forget
but
his
I thought
name,
that he was
Rayon
Baelish.
Or something like that? Rayon?
You know what? I kind of like Baelish because he was like very, very sneaky. And he was just behind the scenes doing dirty things. The reason why it's tough to do with Ailish is she's the least sneaky about it. She's just the belligerent, throws you under the bus in front of everyone. Your mom
really
could be coming to pick you up and she would throw you under the bus right in front of her and not bat an eye. When Ailish throws you under the bus, it is cold-blooded.
If you're going to go for it, go for it.
It is really funny to imagine, though, because Baelish is the guy in the show who, other than maybe the eunuch guy, plays both sides the best. He's always playing both sides. But it's really funny to imagine him just, like, outright telling people he's playing both sides. So, hey, Sansa, gonna sell you into slavery over here.
Yeah.
But also,
okay.
Don't worry, because I'm gonna have your back later. Yeah. I'm playing both sides.
So maybe it's just
sticking?
Lord Ailish. Lord Ailish, because I don't like saying it Baelish, because that's too much of a deep cut. But Lord Ailish works because also the bad guys in Star Wars are called Sith Lords, so it kind of makes me feel like I get that conjuring, I get the Lord, it sounds all bad together, right? Lord is usually just something that a jerk asks you to call them, right? Like, I'm into this. Lord Ailish is the way of it's kind of dorky, though. It's really dorky when I say it out loud. Either way, you do have the hood up today. You've had it up all day today. I don't know. Yeah, there's a little bit of Star Wars thing going on with you. Maybe that's the connection I'm making, but either way, it works. All right, what else do we got?
So... Dave from Barry, who we just talked about and roasted with the Green Day album, has responded in the text line. Wow, Blake, 81 is exactly right. Lol, that's scary analytics.
Wow.
Also, we've been friends for life.
That's a Blake. Blake just took that half-court shot, drilled it right in front of him. That's Blake just did with analytics of ages what it must be like to watch Steph Curry warm up, you know? Like that he just like swish. People are like, wow, he made it from the tunnel? Yeah.
This is it's a calendar. It's not that complex.
I don't know.
He said that they've been friends for life since then, though.
All right. Well,
him
that's
the date.
Friends,
that's
though.
Cute.
Only friends, huh?
Only
Let's hear her side of the story.
Dave.
I want to hear her side of the story,
in.
Dave. You text her and you ask her for her
Send
side
her
of the
podcast,
story.
Send her the podcast. Tell her to give us 5 stars and then also text in 59590 with her side. Slim from Guelph says, so far under the bus, you'll be a qualified heavy diesel mechanic. That's towards me, I assume. So.
Yeah. It's a good one.
Okay, so here's one that I'm only going to read half of because the second half is not for the air. Went out with this girl on Valentine's Day, set up via mutual friends. We went out to Playdium for the evening, had a good night. Then we had Taco Bell / KFC for dinner. Yeah. Didn't talk much. Ooh. So I take her home and walk her up to the door. And then...
Why? Because you were just shoveling KFC and Taco Bell? You combined the two? Like, you went in and you said, hey, not only am I going to eat Taco Bell and just obviously just go... like win the Pooper Bowl or the Super Bowl. I'm going to combine it with KFC, and I'm going to just – I can't think of a worse meal combo to eat on a date.
That's why I wanted Taco Bell and KFC. The rest of the message is not really like – yeah, it's not – it's kind of sad. Anyway, I'll tell you guys about it after. But the whole thing about the KFC Taco Bell on Valentine's Day after Playdium, you couldn't even go to Swiss Chalet?
This is a real dorky date. This is a real dorky date. You went to Playdium. How old was this person when this happened? This changes things if you're 14.
Actually, he doesn't say. This is Chris from Etobicoke. Yeah. He doesn't say.
Now I'm piecing this together. This is one of those things where now I should be going, and you know what? This is a date of a child. There's no way that this is an adult date. You never went out, even in your 20s, to Palladium and then ate KFC and Taco Bell at the same time.
But that's
your
Valentine's
Day. I just love
the
line, we didn't talk much. Yeah, was it because the conversation suffered from you screaming to try to win your points at Palladium? Or was it because you were shoveling, what's the
popcorn
meal?
Chicken.
Yeah, popcorn. You're just like, I don't know. But either way, it's a tough one. That's a tough date. That's a tough date. Those places are great, just not for that purpose, I would say.
Oh, God. Okay, so this is one for me, a special shout out. Hey, Ailish, Dave Mullet here. Not a men's league story, but I recall the early morning pay hockey we used to hit up together at Sutton before school or days that we skipped to play puck at the old Sutton Arena. So I remember this vividly growing up. Mm-hmm. Before school on Tuesdays and Thursdays. There was pay hockey is what we called it at the Sutton Arena. It was like 7 a.m. till I think 8:30 or 9. And my brother and I would go. We'd pay – it's $2 per person. We'd get change. We'd go on the ice. Yeah, such a great deal. We'd play pay hockey for an hour and a half, quickly shower, then go to school. And it was just like the best memories at that old bar in the Sutton Arena. And Dave Mullet texted in, who is a Sutton guy that obviously we played together growing up. Such a small world story. Thanks for texting in. And I love the Sutton Arena. I would love to go back. I wonder if they still have pay hockey. Let me know if they do.
If they do, it's not $2.
No, inflation is probably $10.
Yeah.
At least five, actually. I'd say it's a crisp $5 bill now.
Crisp fiver? Yeah, that's – that. Mm-hmm. Guess what? If it's that, still fair, Sutton Arena. Pay hockey, $5. Seems fair. Anything
well,
else?
Well, now I'm thinking, was it five? No, I think it was $2. He'll probably text back.
No, you got it. $2. You nailed it.
Yeah, $2. You just throw him a toonie. Okay, one about the neck guards that we were talking about. I just lost it. No. The page refreshed. Hold on. Guys, just talk about something.
No, you did it. This is the thing. You're in control.
Sometimes I know. Okay. Yeah. There's a lot in here.
Yeah, I know there's a lot. And I know we get a lot of texts. But also figure it out because it's your job. Yes.
Here's this one here. JD's belly laugh at the Taco Bell KFC story was legendary.
Yeah, I love that Taco Bell kiss. I just love the line, we didn't talk much. That actually got me so hard.
Here's the text.
That tickled the funny bone for me is we didn't talk much as you're just crushing KFC.
The reason I lost is because this person texted back, so it went to the top. 100% on the neck guards. Nothing more uncool as a kid, especially the kids that had the big white puffy ones with the added chest piece sticking out of the jersey. Parents may as well have had a bullseye on their kid.
Yeah, no, that's an awful one. No, I hated neck guards. I just like, I'm glad that we've improved the technology because it was quite terrible. It was quite awful.
The hack way that we used to do it was we would buy one of those like Under Armour shirts with a turtleneck and then cut the turtleneck part off. And it was just like a very thin nylon neck, like basically like a little like choker that had no protection whatsoever. But like it did what you needed to do. That was our little hack on it. Yeah, looked the part. Did it provide any protection? No.
Absolutely not. Absolutely not.
But you didn't get a penalty, so it worked.
Way to go. We only have a minute, so probably no more text. Just say goodbye, bye. That was fun. I always love the text. Thank you for those. If you have anything that didn't make the air, as always, you can fire them away in the DMs. I do love, especially if it's, you know, you going on dates eating Taco Bell and KFC.
We'll put that on the air whenever.
Maybe that'll be the next one, is just the worst food idea you had on a date. Like, that feels like an all-time choke. But, yeah, if you were 13, I guess it's fine. It is the Fan Warning Show. Reach out anytime. At JD Bunkus, at Ailish Forfar, and Blake Murphy. We'll talk to you tomorrow. See ya.